Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
Nora Loretto, writer, activist, organizer in Quebec City. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Nora, today we are going to talk about the agony and the ecstasy and the agony of Omar Khadr. And we are going to talk about the love that dares to speak its name. Raccoon love. Rough trade.
Stabby Malik.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Caden Agnew, Jacob Cormier, Benjamin Piddock, Brett Robertson, Corey Stanford, Kate McLeod, Malcolm Johnson Greenaway, and Renee Lalonde.
My name is Renee Lalonde, and I work in communications in the Greater Toronto area. I support Canada Land because it keeps me up to date on media layoffs and acquisitions, and also so it can be free for broke journalism students.
Nora, I'm going to thank our sponsor today, which is a Daisy lounge chair. I have one in my backyard. I got this article furniture over the winter, and it's been sitting in the garage, and we finally unwrapped the stuff. Have you priced out patio furniture anytime recently, Nora?
Okay, Jesse, do you think I have a backyard?
I like how that's like so posh to imagine that you might have like a deck, a balcony, some outdoor space.
I do have a porch. I have a porch.
Am I too fancy for you?
It's pretty fancy, I gotta say. I got two IKEA chairs that are falling apart, though. So maybe what you say will be interesting to me.
What I'm about to say is going to be fascinating to you, so hold on. Those of you out there who are buying patio furniture know what I am talking about. Article has wonderful patio furniture, like ottomans, couches, chairs, at a rate that is well below what some of the fancy places are trying to charge you for this stuff. And it's just a lot nicer than the cheapest stuff. Like, you don't have to buy the cheapest possible solution. I have these Daisy lounge chairs. They are wonderful. Anything you get from Article, you can send it back if you don't like it. Anything you get from Article, it's a $49 flat rate shipping fee, no matter how much you get. If you get a lot of furniture, like $999 or more, then shipping is free. They also have in-room delivery and assembly assistance, and you will get $50 off if you buy $100 or more of furniture. Check out this stylish stuff at article.com/CanadaLand. $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. All right. right, Nora. Heather Malik has written a column, the headline of which read, "I stabbed a Toronto raccoon. Do not do that." Nora, we are going to stay with this story all night if we have to.
Do you have your dessert fork ready to dive right
in? Yeah, she says. Did you read past the headline? Did you read the thing?
I read the thing because I had to read the thing for today, but I did not read past the headline, and I was not going to read past the headline had I not had to.
It was paywalled, so a lot of people were just responding to the headline, and they missed the depth and substance of this piece. Little conversation around the office, by the way. Do we have to do like a topic on this story, Jesse? To which I answer, just one topic? Hell yes, we're going to talk about this on the show. I could do 32. I mean, you saw social media exploded over this. There were 32 short takes on Heather Malik, and I think that we are going to go through every one of them today, Nora.
Okay, great.
Or at least like three. I don't know. First of all, like, what the hell was this column? I'll read a little bit of this. I feel like I should do my best, Dorothy Parker. I stabbed a Toronto raccoon. Do not do that. I stabbed a raccoon with a fork. He was after me, but to what purpose, I cannot say. Your Honor, what the hell is this voice I'm doing? Your Honor, I don't think food, and I hope not sex. He was following me around the garden, and I couldn't shake him off. A not unfamiliar sensation, as I am frequently targeted by obsessives. I beg your pardon, Your Honor, a dessert fork. It goes on like that. It is written as she's been hauled before the judge to explain why she stabbed the raccoon with a dessert fork. But if you think that this is thin, no, it's not just about Heather Malik eating a cold souffle, no less, with a dessert fork while being accosted by a raccoon who has lascivious erotic intent, or so she imagines. It actually turns out to be a parable. In the end, she relates this to an early troll she had, a guy who sent her angry mail for 11 years and then disappeared. And then she ends up like searching for him. Whatever happened to him? Did he die? Where is he? And then finally he had written something I discovered unpaid in the saddest place on the internet. For the first time, I felt pity. How it must have pained him to feel so small and unheard. But that's not what really caught my attention. He was writing about raccoons in his yard in Ottawa, and his great obsession, hunting them down. I had been his raccoon. Holy shit, mind blown. It's like the Sixth Sense. What an ending. It's all about trolling. The raccoon is, you're hunting the raccoon, so you're the troll. I don't understand this analogy, but something worked because people really, really responded to this piece of writing.
Sorry, this is a piece of writing?
Yes. She's trying so hard. Have some respect.
I can't believe that she manages to admit that her and this troll are now on the same team, and he's more successful than she is in murdering raccoons.
Right, right. There's layers to this thing. You know what? You and I appreciate this in its totality, having read the whole thing. I'm not sure that everybody who responded to it on Twitter actually read the piece. 32 short takes about Heather Malik's raccoon column. The animal rights take from Camille Labchuk. Columnist Heather Malik in the Toronto Star says she stabbed a raccoon in this column. I will be filing a police complaint over animal cruelty and a complaint with Star public editor Kathy English. The only word for this is appalling. So that's the low-hanging fruit, is how dare she brag about this act of animal abuse. But do you think she actually stabbed the fucking raccoon?
No. I think that she probably lunged at the raccoon and he hissed at her and then ran away. And then she was like, well, my souffle is done, so I better go and write a column so that I can be the worst columnist in all of Canada for a solid week. I mean, the worst piece of writing I have read in a long time. And I am not a fan of Heather Malik. I don't read Heather Malik unless I'm at home and I actually have a physical copy of the Toronto Star in my hands. And every single time I read her, it's like, this is illiterate. This does not make any sense. And if you look at the metaphors that she uses in this piece, she moves in between this raccoon wants to kill her. The raccoon wants to bang her. The raccoon is a teenager. The raccoon is an old man who hunts raccoons. I mean, like, the guy, I assume, who edited this must have punched himself in the face several times through the process of trying to edit this.
She contains multitudes. There's text, there's subtext. I don't know what you're saying.
Multitudes of shit.
But I'll tell you what there isn't. There is no raccoon that was stabbed by a fork. There was no baby that Leah McLaren breastfed. She never did it. These people need shit to write about. They make shit up on a slow week. Come on.
Yeah.
Calm down. Don't call the police. Take number two, the I have been hurt before by Rosedale socialites take by Jonathan Kay.
Oh, John.
There was a whole generation of WASP Toronto columnists whose shtick basically consisted of transcribing the previous weekend's successful dinner party monologue. Southey, Hepburn, and Malick are playing out the last wisps of this unfortunate genre. I mean, he's right in that, like, this was an attempt to tell a funny dinner party anecdote. I bristle at his swipe at Tabitha Southey, who actually is kind of funny and witty. But, you know, he's working out his issues. I think that he's been hurt by Walrus and the people who go to those functions. But he's absolutely, Jonathan Kay is right in this occasion, in as much as this is Heather Malick, like, kind of showing her age, as like there was a time when everybody was trying to write these little ribald pieces of anecdotal satire and, you know, stories from my life and like making a cartoon of herself with a cold souffle. And it's just like, it just fell really flat. I just think it's just not a very, like, she tried, she failed. It happens. It happens when you have to file a lot, as columnists do.
Yes. Although I don't want to actually give her that much credit because she misses far more than she doesn't miss her columns, right? Like Kay, yeah, I cannot bring myself to say he's right, even if I might agree with what you've just said. But he's touching on, I mean, that's a bridge too far for me, but he's touching on a very interesting point, which is what is the role of political commentators in Canada or in Toronto? And if that role was to regurgitate droll stories that were told at the last weekend's dinner party, I mean, it's a fucking world that I have no clue what that's even like, but then it's even funnier that it's so shit because she's exposing herself as being such a shit fucking writer that it's on display and you can read it and you're like, oh, okay, that parable did not work. But that's an interesting analysis about the role of what political columnists should be at a newspaper like the Toronto Star. And so as someone who's a political columnist, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And thank you again for exposing yourself as being unworthy to hold that position, Heather Malick.
Well, with that take in mind, here is the whataboutist political take from Senator Denise Batters.
Oh, what?
Recall that this author, Heather Malick, has defended Trudeau on hashtag LavScam, perhaps more fervently than anybody else. Does she think raccoon equals huge problem, but interference in a criminal prosecution equals no big deal? Huh.
Sorry, huh. Are we supposed to believe that Denise Batters has never eaten a raccoon? I mean, come on.
The equity in media take from Desmond Cole. The Toronto Star. Desmond, we hold our columnists to the highest ethical standards. You need to act right or else. Also the Toronto Star. And then a screenshot of, I stabbed a Toronto raccoon. Do not do that. Desmond making a perfectly apt point here that there are different rules for different columnists at the Toronto Star. Desmond was not filing any raccoon stabbing columns in his brief column ship at the Star before he was told you can't be an activist and a columnist, and he left.
And his take, I retweeted that take, that was excellent, and he's right. And again, it shows that if you write nothing, you will be more palatable than someone who actually writes to criticize power. Especially if you're criticizing power within the city of Toronto.
All right, Nora, it's all been leading up to this. The one true take, the humanitarian Jesse Brown take. I used to be on a CBC regular panel with Heather Malick. She was nice. She was like your kind of dotty aunt who, like, she's like your, like, second wave feminist aunt who's like, you know, the takes haven't aged well, but she just sort of like lets it all hang out and she's like, she'll be audacious. She's gotten into so much trouble before. She wrote during Sarah Palin's candidacy with John McCain that Palin resembled like a toned down porn star and, you know, something about Republicans being impotent. And it was like that was right at the moment when she realized she was no longer writing for a sympathetic Toronto Star readership. But now there was this thing called the internet that was looking for extreme stuff like that to fuel partisan, like it got fed into the American political process. Like, look at this columnist who's calling our candidate a porn star and calling us impotent. And she was trolled and she's never recovered from that trolling. Like, she just like found herself in the eye of a hurricane that was the American presidential election. And she got like torrents of hate mail. And ever since then, the internet's been her enemy. She's blocked me and thousands of others on Twitter. You know, she's been from the Globe to CBC, now to the Star, and every like 5 to 10 years, she writes some ludicrous thing that gets people very, very angry. And, you know, like, what do we do in Canada? Like, you know, it's not their fault. Like, we have this class of columnists who in a sane system would have been told some time ago, okay, let's make way for some new ideas. And now they're just like Conrad Black and Heather Malik and like, you know, Leah McLaren's got to write about this. She's got to write about something. And so it's only a matter of time before they write something like this, before it's I bought a crack house or I killed a raccoon or I breastfed Michael Chong's baby or, you know, like, do we have no compassion for people who have to write out of their asses, who, you know, that's their job and they're no longer tethered to the world in which the rest of us live? Is there no feeling in you, Nora, for this class of columnists?
I have negative feelings towards them. I mean, it is baffling to me to read this. Like, as someone who's a political writer who has been stonewalled to be published in Canadian mainstream publications, fucking name it, right? I can't get published in Canada, in a lot of places. And thank God there's the National Observer who's willing to publish my column. And I don't really, like, your job is to be able to write every single week on the matters of the day, whether that's something that's happened to you personally, whether that you're commenting on SNC-Lavalin, like, that is your fucking job. And my God, I would fucking stab a rabbit to have that job.
I wish this for you. You know what? I think that yours is an important voice that we don't hear enough of. I think somebody should give you a mainstream column. And this is what I wish for you. I wish that in your geriatric years, as you float away from relevance, people still publish your personal diary on a weekly basis as an act of kindness rather than place you on an ice floe. That's what I want for you.
Does she have a pension? Because fuck, I don't have a pension and I will have to start resorting to that in 50 years. But I do think that what you're saying is interesting, that the internet has ravaged people's mental health. And I think that that is true. Malik, there's signs of that all over the place, you know, as she has been very liberal with anybody that has lightly criticized her stuff. She blocks them. She doesn't want to hear the criticism. And then there's other Toronto Star columnists who are in the same boat. I have sympathy to that to an extent. Malik, who I do not know, took a swipe at me in one of these rambling stream of consciousness columns in the summer, talking about what I said about the Humboldt Broncos crash, and it was completely false and fucking inflammatory. And so she not only cannot take it, but she dishes and she dishes and she dishes. And so it's like, at what point does a Toronto Star become negligent by continuing to have someone like this writing every week? Or is the Toronto Star going to come out and say, yeah, actually that column was pretty good? And if that's the case, and it's like, okay, well, we can engage in that discussion. But I mean, I don't have much sympathy for Malik at all, other than if she's writing because she needs the work. I mean, we need better pensions and people need to have time to retire and live out the rest of their days, not on an ice floe, but in some nice deck chair furniture.
Nora, do you have a duly noted for the show in which we note things duly when necessary?
I do have a duly noted, and this one is something that keeps happening, and it happened most recently two days ago, I think, to a Radio Canada journalist whose name, unfortunately, I could not find, but you'll know the trope. He's reporting from the outside of the Leafs game, and someone comes up to him while he's reporting and starts touching him and continues to touch him. And this keeps happening. Reporters who are on the job, live, talking on their microphone, and someone comes up behind them and starts harassing them. Sometimes it's sexual harassment. Sometimes they're whispering in their ears. And I don't understand why news agencies don't seem to be taking this seriously. And instead, we're relegated to saying, wow, so-and-so kept their cool. Wow, they did such an amazing job while their harassment was on full display for the world to see. And I'm frustrated by that because unless management, news agencies start making policies to say, look, the second that this starts happening, we're going to cut the feed, for example, it's going to keep happening, and forcing the person who's the subject of the harassment while they're also doing or trying to do their job to be the one to stop it or to address it is so unfair. It's a question of workplace safety, and I am disgusted to see that it just keeps happening. And worse, it stays on air. And so we get several seconds. Sometimes it feels like up to 10 seconds of uncomfortable touching of a journalist just trying to do their job.
I hear you, and I think that the trope that you're referring to, just to be descriptive to people who might not know, is the fuck her right in the pussy yelling that.
Oh, man, you don't have to say that.
It's just this shitty, stupid, harassing, offensive thing that people do to journalists. It is a crime if you are touching someone. It is, I think, disgusting, vulgar behavior. I think that your suggestion that they should just cut the feed is a good one. So you basically, like, demotivate this thing. Like, you're not going to get your little bit of airtime. I'm totally in favor of when people are like, oh, I know that guy. Let's ask his boss if he's okay with this guy saying shit like that. I'm totally on side with you that, like, you know, word up to the journalists who just do their jobs and maintain their cool. They haven't done anything wrong. But I hear you, the praising them for that. Like, what if they didn't? What if they turned around and smacked them in the face? What if they turned around and yelled at the person? That would be okay, too. There's totally no wrong way to deal with somebody who's accosting you like that. The only thing where I'm going to push up against you here is the workplace harassment thing. We do our jobs in public. We don't own that space. Our workplace is their public square. If somebody, people don't have to respect the fact that I'm doing a news hit or that I'm recording radio somewhere. If you want to come and do your culture jamming thing and yell into my, if you have disrespect for the media, it's a public space. And I accept that we do our work in public. It's not an excuse for harassing behavior, assaults. It's not an excuse for yelling obscenities where there's kids. Like, but, you know, I just think it's just like a little too, this whole workplace harassment angle.
Except that the public ends the second that someone's hand is on your body. And so I appreciate that there are things that might happen that people do on air. The second that someone is touched and the second that it crosses the line into harassment, that shit needs to stop.
Agreed. Duly noted. I have one.
Give her.
Somebody got sued and it wasn't us. Ricochet Media is going to court. Who'd have thought that they would get sued before we would? But I take no pleasure in that. I'm just pointing it out. This is an interesting one. It could have just as easily been us. We published a satirical obituary lambasting Conrad Black. They published, there's a whole tradition of satire of the satirical obituary for the person who's still alive as a way of scorching them. They published a satirical excoriating obituary for Quebecois columnist Richard Martineau.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell people a little bit? Are you familiar with the works of Richard Martineau?
Richard Martineau is one of the worst in Quebec media. This guy is horrible. He's so horrible that he was actually banned from Facebook last week. I haven't looked at the details of what this lawsuit is. I imagine that you have that right at your fingertips. But Martineau is the worst of the worst of the worst. And he constantly says things to inflame, to incite racial tensions, or just makes you want to set your newspaper on fire. The only difference in the Quebec media world, and specifically with the Journal Quebec, Journal Montréal, where he writes, is they at least have some columnists who are not that bad. Whereas, you know, in Canada, pretty much it's only bad. But Martineau himself is horrible.
I've done my best to orient myself for this. You know, whenever there's a libel case, it's just like, my mind goes like, show me the libelous material. Let's go right for the part that you consider libelous, because it's about the word. It's about what did Ricochet print about this guy? The fact that you made fun of him in a fake obituary is not libelous. So, you know, using my Google Translate, I don't want to get this wrong if there was some context that is specific to the French-speaking world. But from what I could tell, this was absolutely fair game. That they were excoriating him for the things that he's written, for how bad a writer he is, for the positions that he's taken. It is absolutely, from what I can tell in the translation that I read, this does appear to me to be libel chill. This appears like one of these like paper thin skinned so-called free speech warriors who supports free speech until it's against them. And then they want to go through the courts and it's a bully tactic. I don't think Ricochet had any kind of libel insurance at the time. They've raised money for their legal defense. As far as I can tell, based on my read of this, when they go to defend themselves, they are defending my right to publish similar material and everybody else's. So just wanted to make note of that because it hasn't really bubbled out of the French media world as far as I can tell.
Duly noted.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Nora, you are bilingual. You are in Quebec City. You can help me here, and you can help our listeners to understand the context of this Omer Khadr appearance on Tout le monde en parle. How did I do there, by the way?
I didn't completely cringe, but I did cringe a little.
Okay, that's actually the best I've ever done. Okay. Mild cringe is a personal best. This is a big deal show in Quebec, in French-speaking Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Yeah, Tout le monde en parle does not have like an English counterpart show. This is the most watched show in Quebec. It's a show that can make or break people's popularity or how the public views them. It was famous for helping to launch Jack Layton and his political career in the early days of what became the Orange Wave. And so Sunday night, you know, if you're a Quebecer and you've got a TV, you're either watching La Voix, which is like a singing contest, or you're watching Tout le monde en parle.
This is where Jack Layton excelled, and then the Orange Wave came. This is where former Heritage Minister Mélanie Joly bombed out, and just that was it for her. Like, this is, you go before this panel of celebrities and judges and people, and they grill you, and it's kind of fun and like game show carnival-y feeling, but there's also tough questions. Am I getting it right?
That's right. They'll sit there with a glass of wine or a glass of water or both, and it brings a talk show format into kind of a round table. And so every person who's brought onto the show has a moment with the main interviewer, Guy Lepage. And once that's passed, the other people who are on the same episode as you, who, you know, almost always have nothing to do with what you might be there to talk about, then there's a bit of opportunity for some crosstalk between the guests. And it's before a live audience, and it makes the news. It's something that politicians want to get on the eve of elections, that people who have who want to put a position forward to change public opinion, they want to get onto Tout le monde en parle. And its importance really can't be overstated in this province. It's the show. It's the show to try and get on.
Let's hear a little bit of what this sounded like. Omer Khadr was speaking in English with a translator. We'll mostly just hear his answers to the questions. So let's play that now.
Omer Khadr, bienvenue à Tout le monde en parle. Ce qui vous empêchait notamment de vous déplacer librement, vous considérez-vous maintenant comme un homme libre?
I'm almost free. From the time I regained consciousness, I was told that I had killed an American soldier, and for the 8 years, I believed that I must have done it, because I was told that I was the only survivor and that I had done it. So I believed in that all the way up to the trial. And then I started hearing alternate scenarios, mm-hmm, and different testimonies. So I can't tell you exactly what's the true story. Saying that I was a child soldier would assume that it was a regular war and I was in a regular army. You know, I was with adults. They told me to do something and I did it. I don't hold anything against anybody. And I know people might find that surprising or not believable, but I just think that I have better things to worry about in healing myself than, mm-hmm, to hold a grudge or hate or anger against anybody.
So I think that what people saw was, you know, it's not as if it was a complete softball thing. Like, he was asked tough questions about whether or not he killed somebody. He was asked tough questions about the settlement that people are very angry about. But I do think it's accurate to say that this was a very humanizing forum for him to, like, it's sort of, if you do well in this forum, I mean, you can flame out, but if you answer the questions honestly and openly, and, you know, it certainly was a dignified place for him to show himself. He was applauded on the show, and that's got people very angry.
Yeah, he came across very much like a human, like a person, which is not something that we see very often in English Canada. You know, there's kind of two eras that mark the way that Omar Khadr had been covered in Canada. There's the first era, which was him being in Guantanamo and how it was all connected to the International War on Terror and the kind of the day-to-day or month-to-month updates of court processes. And then there's a second era where he has really been used quite effectively by the right, that range of far right to soft right, as an example of what a certain kind of Canadian finds abhorrent about Justin Trudeau or about the justice system, which is that Omar Khadr, a Canadian, 15 years old, who confessed to killing an American soldier, but who doesn't remember it. In the show, he says that he confessed because it's the only way to get out of Guantanamo, and who won a court settlement with the government because the government sent him to be tortured by a foreign government. All of this comes out in the show, and he speaks with such class and has no ill comments towards anyone. It's such a compelling interview that I felt myself really kind of being plunged into remembering the last 15 years following this case very closely and seeing on the other side of what seemed to be horrible, because I'm about the same age as him. And I remember thinking from the perspective of someone who was the same age, like, imagine going through that. To see someone emerge on the other end who harbors no ill will, apparently that's, you know, certainly the sense that he gave off on the show, and who has tried to just be a normal Canadian, regardless of these massive storms around him, trying to turn him into something else. It's a really remarkable interview. And I think considering the context of Quebec politics right now, where every major bill that the CAQ government is trying to pass attacks immigrants, it attacks racialized people, racialized workers, and specific with the taxi industry, or the religious symbols ban. It was a very good moment for this interview. And as you said, the questions weren't softballs. They were actually really difficult questions. At one point, they run a tape that many Canadians might remember of Omar crying while he's being interrogated, very clearly a kid. And I found that very difficult to watch. I can't imagine what it'd be like to watch that while you're also on Quebec's highest rated show.
Nora, I feel like Omar Khadr has become this weird, like, Rorschach test. Like, what you see when you see Omar Khadr tells me a lot about what kind of a Canadian you are or what you think about being a Canadian. And I don't want to give too much time or credibility or attention to the very predictable, angry response. But for the sake of just context, as we are a media show looking at the media response, you know, the angry responses were predictable from, of course, Ezra Levant taking it to its extreme. He sees this as nothing less than the CBC basically conspiring against normal Canadians. The CBC planned for their Easter special in Quebec to feature Omar Khadr, the Al-Qaeda terrorist and war criminal. That's horrific. But even after the terrorist massacre of Christians in Sri Lanka, CBC proceeded to go to air. They didn't swap that segment out or postpone it. A lot of people saying the same thing, seeing this as like taking a side, and the fact that there was this attack on Christians, like this is somehow taking the other side. I think in a separate tweet, Ezra Levant said that this was proof that the CBC hates you, he said to his followers. Nothing less than an outright attack on you, your faith, your values. This guy's a terrorist and a killer, and here he is being made a celebrity, glorified and whatnot. I mean, we can respond to that if you want to. I just feel like it's what it is. And I could have written that tweet for him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except that Levant has a lot of pull over a lot of people. And what Levant peddles as being the extreme, Andrew Scheer measures himself from Levant and says, okay, well, you know, I don't need to go that far, but Levant is paving the way for me to take a position that is, you know, using Khadr still as a way to bludgeon Trudeau on the settlement for having allowed a foreign government to torture him.
I think that's valid. And, you know, it's like kind of setting that far goalpost so you can orient yourself somewhere to the left of that. He has his uses. I just don't find it that interesting. Like, what I find really interesting about Omar Khadr is that for most people, they're ambivalent. I mean, I certainly feel like, you know, a 9-year-old kid placed in that kind of situation by his own parents, taken abroad, put amongst lunatics and bombs, and then, you know, the vulnerability of being in a war zone where the greatest military force the world has ever known is just bludgeoning, just destroying everything. And then you want to hold him responsible, like we're still asking these questions about what you did or didn't do or what you can remember. I mean, literally, like, you know, it's very surprising that he's alive, lost his eye, shot, injured, and then 10 years in Guantanamo Bay, like 2.5 years in solitary. And then people saying like, oh, well, he's getting this payoff now. Like, I would not trade places with him. You know, offer me $10.5 million for 2.5 years in solitary or 10 years from age like 15 to 25. Like, who would take that deal? Like, we place too much value in money and this idea that he's being glorified, like he's living it up now. This guy's had a really tragic life. And you bring up this question of like how sincere he is. And like, I don't even care, really, like if he's angry with Canada or if he's sincere in his peaceful reconciliation with Canada. You know, certainly I'm glad he's not furious. It would be unpleasant. Like, these are kind of like ancillary issues. I think that the way that you feel about Omar Khadr is like, look, what makes you Canadian? Is it your race and your religion and your family that makes you Canadian? Or like if you're born in Canada, you have a Canadian passport, and if some foreign government locks you up in some extrajudicial process where you have no rights, Canada's on the hook for letting that happen, you know, and there's we have a system of courts that deals with that. So, you know, like when Khadr says on the show that my settlement is for all Canadians, that's appalling to some people, but I understand what he means. What he means is what makes us Canadian is that we are a country of laws, you know, that we're not about the color of your skin or your religion. What was done to me shouldn't have happened to anyone. And if it does happen, there needs to be some kind of a due process. And that's what played out here.
I just want to say, I agree with you. And I think it's also important for us to remember that Khadr comes from the same era as Meir Arar, who was handed over to Syria and tortured by the Canadian government. And so this protection of Canadian rights and the right to due process is so important. And why is the far right more obsessed with Sergeant Christopher Speer, the person who Khadr killed or allegedly killed or whatever, than say the four Canadians who were first killed at the start of the war in Afghanistan by so-called friendly fire? I mean, that this is where the details of what happened to Khadr actually don't matter, and where we need to see him as being weaponized by the far right to keep people in line and to toe their line that birthright Canadian citizenship is wrong, and that religion can disqualify you from being a real Canadian, and that Omar Khadr is the symbol of all that is wrong with Canada, and we need to make it right.
Yeah, that's true of the far right. But what I find interesting about the many interpretations of Khadr is how he plays to everyone else. And I think it's worth taking our time to consider. It's not just because everyone's under the spell of Levant's propaganda. I think that some people look at Omar Khadr and they say, wow, your family, like your parents were like buddies with Osama bin Laden. Your sister talks about martyrdom and seems to be absolutely sympathetic to Islamist terror in its most classically defined violent 9/11. You know, your family is like, come on, wake up. This is the enemy. They're telling you they're the enemy. And their kid is the enemy too. And he was building bombs against us. And how stupid are we to, you know, take the enemy under our bosom and treat them so nicely? This is why we're going to fail and die. And so, you know, I think that kind of like in the middle, you've got Canadians who can go back and forth because there is a part where their compassion kicks in and say, yeah, but this guy was just a kid. And they see that tape of him in Guantanamo crying, and they know that he was 9 when he was taken over there, and they can have compassion for that. And the public media image of Khadr upon his return to Canada in that wonderful Michelle Shepard documentary. But not just that, like it felt to me like the cop showed up at his doorstep in Edmonton and said, welcome. Let us know if there are any problems or if anyone bothers you. Nobody bothered him. The media portrayals were like, okay, like let's lay off this guy. He's been through hell. Let's let him try to have a normal life. Like it did matter that he had a nice warm smile and didn't seem angry. We wanted to make sure of that because frankly, he could have come back angry. I would be pretty pissed off with Canada if they abandoned me in Guantanamo Bay for 10 years. He wasn't. And so he was acceptable. Then he gets the payout and he's no longer acceptable. And now we're gonna hound him if he buys a shopping mall as an investment with his money. I mean, he can't get a job as a nurse, which he's trained to do because of his history, but we begrudge him this. And if he gets clapped for on TV, we begrudge him that. It was interesting to me to read Lauren Gunter in the Toronto Sun saying that I was a supporter of Cotter being repatriated from Guantanamo Bay because he is a Canadian citizen. I argued for him to receive the surgery he needed to save his eyesight at taxpayer expense. I welcomed the volunteerism of staff and students at Edmonton's King's University to help him earn a degree. I backed his bail release. And while I opposed the federal payout to him, and still do, I thought it was fair that a judge declared last month that his sentence was at an end. But the point here is that the CBC is once again taking sides on a contentious issue using everyone's tax dollars. The only way to stop that is to end Ottawa's massive annual subsidy to CBC.
Yeah.
What is the other side? What is Omer Khadr's side? You know, like I want to understand this position because to understand Canadians, you have to understand people who voted for Rachel Notley and then voted for Jason Kenney, who voted for Kathleen Wynne. And then voted for Doug Ford. The same individuals who felt one way about Omer Khadr are now disgusted by Omer Khadr. You know, the same individuals who supported him don't support what? Him going on TV. Like, that's a bridge too far.
I'm not sure I agree that when he came back to Canada, that things were overwhelmingly sympathetic for him. I think that what has happened is that the narrative has definitely shifted for this payout. And so that becomes fodder for people to use against him and against Trudeau. And the Conservatives have very cleverly seized on that, and you can see the effect of it everywhere. But the anti-Khadr sentiment was definitely there before this payout. There was definitely that voice saying, you know, he should rot in Guantanamo, he shouldn't come back to Canada, he should have his citizenship revoked. And I think that, you know, again, going back to the fact that the details of this situation don't actually matter for these people, it's kind of the confluence of the payout, the rise of the Conservative Party through politics that are aggressive and mean, and a media that hasn't really covered him, aside from, oh, remember Omer Khadr, he's gotten this payout. And so for Tout le monde en parle to say, where is this guy now, right? They have lots of people on the show all the time, and so it makes complete sense that someone like Omer Khadr would go on a show like that. And for him to have questions that were difficult, that were not asked to make him be sympathetic, I mean, it was straight journalism. And instead, what you get from people, certainly I've gotten this all day since I posted the interview yesterday, is people saying, well, we have to defund the CBC. And so this is about the campaign against the CBC more than it is about Omer Khadr. But Khadr is a very easy person for this kind of world to use to make their arguments that the CBC shouldn't exist. But it's also very enlightening in that they are taking issue with a show that is doing, I think, really basic journalism. And basic journalism for these people is what they're actually opposed to. They're not opposed to having a national public broadcaster. They are opposed to having someone who they dislike being on TV and interviewed. And for fuck's sakes, at a very, very small example of that, I know that very fucking well.
You know, he's just like a useful prop for anybody. Like, he's a useful prop for your arguments against the CBC. You know, he can be a useful prop for your arguments against Trudeau. You can't help but just like, when is the drama for this guy going to be done? And but for this appearance, I think it's being clear that all he wants is for it to be done and over with and to go back to a normal life. I think people are wondering, well, then why would he do this show? The truth is he hasn't given any interviews for years. And he must have suspected that, like, okay, I'm going to be asked tough questions, but A, I'm going to be reaching a massive audience, and B, it'll be fair. I will have an opportunity to say my piece and be heard. And perhaps I can start to turn the tide. I just, you know, I can't imagine what his life is like day to day in Edmonton. He, I think, cannot go to the United States. If I were him, I'd probably be afraid to travel anywhere. I don't know. I think that the cynics out there are saying he's going to try to stage some sort of media career. Maybe he just wants to have the option of living in Quebec quietly. I have no idea, but you can't. I have trouble wishing anything for him but just like peace, you know?
Yeah, but also, like, consider the one side that we've identified. We've got the side of hate that focuses on Trudeau, that focuses on Khadr as a terrorist. The other side, which is the much more important side, and this is what journalists should be concerned with, is Khadr gives us the opportunity to talk about human rights and the right of the person and the right to due process and the right of child soldiers. Like, what he actually does offer Canadians is the opportunity for us to reflect collectively on the need to protect our human rights. And considering that the Conservative Convention actually had a motion that examined stripping people of Canadian birthright citizenship, all of the discussions around asylum seeking and what it takes to become a Canadian and what it means to become a Canadian, the discussion that people of good conscience should be having that relates to Omar Khadr needs to make the connections between what he experienced as an extreme and what we need to defend in this country as it relates to the individual rights or the rights of the person. And again, keep in mind the context in Quebec, that question of fundamental human rights is on everybody's mind as we are debating the projet de loi that wants to ban religious symbols within the public sector, which will specifically target Muslim women.
But see, now I feel like you're projecting your agenda onto him just the same that as others do and using him as a prop for a different purpose. You know, Mayor Arar made a choice to be an advocate for human rights. He said, okay, let's use my case as an example. Let's have that conversation. I don't feel like Omar Khadr is saying that. He's not saying, let's look at human rights abuses. Let's look at extradition. I'm going to become an activist or I'm going to launch these conversations. I have no reason to believe he wants anything but to put to rest the whirlwind that he basically, through no willful acts of his own, his life has been placed in since he was a small child. Nora, that is your Canada Land Shortcuts. Thank you very much for joining me for it.
Thank you.
Everybody, you can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Nora, where can people find you and where can they find your podcast?
You can find me at N-O-L-O-R-E on Twitter. No lore. The podcast is sandyandnora.com. And you can find my writing most recently in the National Observer.
We have a website, canadalandshow.com. And this week, there's a new episode of Oppo in which Jen and Justin go through the whole goddamn country and tell you what's going on politically, province by province, territory by territory. I just learned things from that show. Nora, I'm sure you do too. But before I can get your response to that, I will say that this episode is produced by David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do here, you can get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts when you go to patreon.com/CanadaLand and help us out. We do rely on your support.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.